Welcome to the New Zealand Tech Podcast, presented by Paul Spain and Anne Guest.
Former CEO of Orcon.
Thank you.
And I'm Tim Martin, the CEO of Coliseum.
Welcome along, guys. Great to have you both here.
Thank you.
CB, maybe just to start with, you can just give us an intro of where you fit into the technology and telecommunications world in New Zealand.
Sure. So when I was 19, I started Orcon Internet and ran that for 10 years and then sold it to Cordia, which is a state-owned enterprise. They've recently just sold that business to a group of private investors, and I was on sabbatical for a few years, and I have now got another startup called Voyager Internet, and basically we've been doing a roll-up of a bunch of domain name and hosting companies, so we now register about 20% of the domain names in New Zealand.
Cool. And Tim, tell us a little bit about your new enterprise.
Yeah, right. So we are the rights holders for the English Premier League in New Zealand, and we are distributing that content exclusively over the internet.
That's great. Well, let's jump in, and I think let's have that discussion first. I'm keen to hear more about what you're doing and how we're going to access football this season. Now, it all kicks off what, this weekend?
Yeah, so Saturday night, sort of just after midnight, is game on.
That's excellent. Now, you've caused quite a stir in the media over the last few weeks. Now, you know, New Zealanders are used to the fact that if they want to, you know, catch sport, if it's not available free to air, then you know they're paying money to Sky.
Yeah,
and you know, Sky has really been the predominant way that people have accessed video content, really of any form, for quite some time.
That's right.
Now things have started to stir up a little bit over the last few years with access to, you know, various forms of content via the internet. The likes of QuickFlix, who we were chatting with last week, starting to offer content through Xboxes and PlayStations and you know, various other sort of methods. Now, what's your story? How are people going to get hold of football this season?
Well, the great way, I think, about having stuff on the internet is you can get hold of it any way you want, really. I mean, you just need a broadband connection, and you know, you can do it anyway. So it's all going to be under the platform of PremierLeaguePass.com, and you know, it'll be PC, Mac, iPhone, iPad apps, Android apps for both tablet and phone. Throughout the course of the first season, we'll be rolling out smart TV apps. We'd look to do deals with PlayStation, Xbox, you know, get as many ways to access the content as is possible. And that's what's really advantageous about it. I mean, you don't need anyone to come around and bolt a satellite to your house, and, you know, you don't need to wait 3 weeks for a technician to come in and tune your box up. You just log on and subscribe, and away you go and watch football.
Now, at launch this weekend, you know, your predominant way that you're going to access it is through a web browser.
That's right.
But over time, that's going to change. How far off are you with, for instance, an iPhone or an iPad app? Is that two days away? I hope so.
Yeah, that's built. It's built. Yep. It's with Apple. It's you know, we're going through that process now. So it's all built and with them. So is the Android stuff. That's all done. So really, it's as soon as they're okay. I mean, the developers are experts at dealing with Apple. They were the first guys to deliver a sports app through Apple in the history of Apple, and they did it for the NHL and way back when. So, you know, they deliver 40,000 live sport events a year through the internet, these guys.
So this is coming out of the US, right?
That's right. So we all that stuff's developed out of New York, and you know, those guys are the global experts, and so people should take a lot of heart from that. I mean, we haven't just you know, taken this content that people dearly love, and which, because it's, you know, it's pretty amazing stuff, the Premier League, and we haven't taken it, we're not experimenting with it. You know, we are taking this cherished content and using it with the best online sports distributors in the world who have been proven. They've been doing this since 2007. You know, they do it for the NBA, they do it for the NFL, they do it for the UFC, you know, they do it for the Chinese government, and, you know, stream the Olympic Games into China, where it got 670 million views. So, you know, it's in safe hands. And, you know, it was a big news story when it came out. And I think the reality is that wasn't really so much about us. That was actually a news story. It was really about Sky. And, you know, that's to your point earlier, is that they've had a pretty good run at content because, you know, they've owned the distribution system and the way it goes. But a really good point to note is over, you know, 50% of New Zealand households do not have Sky.
Mm. And Sky runs a good monopoly, so...
Yeah, I think that's right. And so, you know, there's a whole bunch. And, like, you know, we know a lot of guys at football clubs, a lot of families. You know, they don't have Sky, but they'd love to see the Premier League. If you're 20 years or younger and don't have Sky, you've never seen a game of Premier League football on TV. And so, you know, we've now made that available to everyone. And as a big part of the deal that we did is, you know, we got TVNZ involved. And... the reason for that is, you know, there's now a game of the week on TV1 at midday on Sunday, and that'll be the best game of the round that they'll pick and, you know, they'll put up there. And that makes the Premier League free to every household in New Zealand. And that's the first time that's happened in, what, since, well, 20 years.
So can they pick any game they want, or there's some constraints around what they
there are no
choose?
Longer any constraints around that, so they're now able to pick every game. So I think you'll see a lot of, you know, Manchester United, Manchester City, Arsenal and Tottenham. I think you'll see a lot of that on TVNZ.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
And I suppose that although it's browser based, you can obviously, you know, AirPlay that to your TV if you've got an Apple TV.
That's right.
Now and everything. So tech savvy people listening to the podcast will be able to figure out how to get it on their TV. So
yeah,
look, they'll have the same experience as, you know.
That's a really good point, Steve. Yeah, that's right, mate. This is the thing. It's the ways to get, you know, internet onto your TV. I mean, there's just so many different ways to do it. I mean, it's not even really talking about TV anymore. Is it talking about a big screen? And, you know, there are lots of people who we understand and accept that they need help with that. And so we've got a New Zealand-based call center, which can talk you through. We've got, plus as well, we've got live chat through every game up with our tech partners in New York. So there's lots of different ways. And so we've set up the infrastructure to help people to get it on their TVs. There's connection guides on site. We've taken all the different kinds of TVs and all the different kinds of laptops and all the kind of different cords you might need. But certainly, CB, I'm a big fan of the AirPlay. I just think it works great. It's easy.
Well, I noticed that on my new laptop, and, you know, in the past, if you wanted to get, you know, stuff onto your TV, you had to have a VGA adapter and this and that and a, you know, analog adapter and blah. But I noticed my new laptop, just actually the port out is actually an HDMI port. So
yeah,
that's the thing. And then if you don't have HDMI, then you've got AirPlay. So, you know,
yeah,
as long as you've got an Apple TV for $99.
The options are certainly improving. I mean, it really is the bulk of the market. Yeah, it doesn't have AirPlay on their laptop.
That's right.
Because most laptops are still, you know, Windows based. But as you say, Stevie, most of the newer ones have got an HDMI port or, you know, something equivalent that will go straight into a TV. And, you know, those AirPlay style options, we're seeing more and more of those things become mainstream.
I think there's actually an AirPlay program for Windows called Parrot or something. I'm sure I saw it somewhere.
Yeah, it's not that good.
Okay.
So I'll try that one just yet.
But right. The reality is there are lots and lots of ways of doing this.
Well, that's it.
And, you know, most people will have a laptop in their home that they can reasonably easy hook up to a TV and, you know, and we're talking iPhone, Android, and
that's right,
iPod,
you
know, iPad, etc. I mean, there are lots and lots of options.
There is. The other thing as well is, you know, everyone says, I don't want to watch my sport on a small screen, like an iPad. And those are typically the people who have never done it. And, you know, when you've got something like the Premier League, which, you know, the first game kicks off at 12:30 and then, you know, that game's run through all the way to sort of 7 in the morning, it's not bad to be able to have a device that you can lie in bed and watch sport on. And the iPad is fantastic for that.
Well, the size of the screen's all relative to how close it is to
That's
you,
right.
And, you know, I'll sit at home and watch things on the projector and, you know, it might be 80, 100-inch sort of picture.
Glory,
but
yep.
Actually, it's, you know, it's great too watching stuff on a tablet that's... that's nearby as well. So.
That's right. Look, it's a great way to look. Lying in bed, I do it with the NFL, and just, you know, lying in bed and watching a game on the iPad is fantastic. I mean, it's not the only experience, but again, this is what we're about. You know, I think this is what the tech's about, is providing options. So you're not chained to your living room anymore. You know, and the other great thing as well is because of the times difference and all that sort of thing, because it's just a login based system. You know, it travels with you. You know, it's fantastic to be able to watch a game of sport in the office on Monday morning. No one needs to know. Just keep it to yourself. You just log on. But you can do that now, right?
So it's lucky you don't have a boss from the sounds of things.
No, well, that's right. I guess I've got a little relaxed up at Coliseum. But, you know, that's true, is that that's the thing. Wherever you are, this thing travels with you. And so you just never need to miss a second of the action. You really just never need to wait for your sport again.
Well, just I congratulate when you, watch you on it, you watch what you're it. Doing, because I think, you know, it was only a few years ago that probably TVNZ and the government and everyone was kind of in this panic about, well, we've got the digital changeover, we're all going to digital TV, Sky's got the only option, so basically we're all going to have to put, you know, TVNZ on Sky. And I think, you know, what you're doing is the first realisation that actually, you know, TV 1, 2, 3, 4, or TVNZ, or Maori television, or whatever show, you know, wants to be on the internet as a primary medium can actually work, and internet speeds and things are good enough now to actually make that work. So, you know, with UFB and, as you say, cabinetisation and that kind of thing, we're actually reaching a level where, you know, if you wanted to get rid of your Sky decoder, you can. And I was reading a report on pay TV in the US recently, and they were saying that, you know, it's long been kind of a fallacy that pay TV subscribers would ever go down. But the last quarter, they've sort of seen a beginning of a sort of decimation of pay TV in the US, because everyone in the house just watches YouTube and, you know, movies on demand and things.
Yeah, I think that is becoming, you know, becoming a true reality in the US market, that people are, you know, disconnecting from traditional forms of TV. And, you know, the likes of certainly Netflix has really helped with that. But, the piece, when we've discussed this in the past here, and, you know, we've got a guide up on the NZ Tech Podcast website for those who want to jump through the hoops and get onto Netflix. Of course, there's, you know, QuickFlix and other options locally as well through Apple TV and Xbox for content. But, you know, we've always said, yeah, but if you're into sport, then you've got to keep a Sky subscription. And I think, the exciting piece here, Tim, is if you can get this right and you can deliver this well.
That's right.
And you can keep getting more sports and other things, you know, over time.
Right.
Then it does totally change the picture of what consumers have. Well, so there's a lot resting on your shoulders.
Yeah, and we're feeling that.
You know, we'll probably be highly critical if you stuff anything.
Well, look, I think
up,
it's a fair. Look, we accept that. You know, you can't jump into this stuff lightly, and you can't start with something like the Premier League and not expect to get some criticism, because it's serious stuff. But, you know, the criticisms moved from when we announced what we were doing. The criticism was fired at us that it would never work, that the buffering would be this huge problem, and that it would never work. Now the criticism is everyone's seen it and gone, it typically far exceeds people's expectations, far exceeds it. And now the criticism or question is, when's it going to be HD? And the answer to that is, look, pretty soon. I mean, our tech is capable of delivering HD and Dolby 5.1 surround sound. And what we need is, you know, it's quite a lot of data for us to bring down through the network. And, you know, as we were discussing earlier, you know, our network costs are not cheap, you know, because we use the best and we do cache it all locally. But that's in the pipeline, and that is something that I would love to see happen in this first season as we move to a high def option.
All right. Well, yeah, you jumped the gun on me a bit there before I could,
I'm sorry,
you know, slap you down for not having HD.
Yeah,
that is good. Well, I hope that can be at the, you know, at the you know, sooner rather than later end.
Yeah, I hope so too.
And, yeah,
I do. I mean, we want to get there, and we can do it. Technically, we can do it. It's a cost issue, and it's also a, you know, how many subscribers out there are actually able to take it and make full advantage of it. And then also it's, you know, how we actually deliver it from a platform perspective, and, you know, do we just make it available to everyone? Do we make it to the people who can do it? Do, you know, how we do that? We're just working all that. But that's actually a live work stream for us.
Okay, great. Now, one of the other aspects, and for instance, when I log onto my Xbox and I've got a US setup, so I'm seeing all of these different sort of sports leagues are listed on there.
Yeah.
Probably through the same,
provider. Yeah, New Line will be all over that stuff. Yeah,
through the same provider, through New Line. They're all there for the US.
Mm-hmm.
What's it going to take to get those apps down, you know, into Xbox and PlayStation and so on in the New Zealand market? Are there a lot of hoops to jump through? That takes quite a bit of time to do, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so. So, I mean, you've got to get the rights. It's all about the rights, the stuff. And the thing that we've discovered with rights is they are so perishable. There's one of them, typically. And if you miss it, then it's gone for years. You don't get another chance. And despite, you know, what people are saying out there, there's not many back doors in. Do you know what I mean? The rights holders are well protected. And it does, you know, you've got to get the rights. And what you find typically is the rights holder in a lot of sports. So our point of view on sport and why we moved into this, one of the reasons we moved into this space, is that we feel it's the last media category to really move online. So, you know, you have a look at that stuff, it's still driven by pay TV operators. That's still the model of sport. And you have a look at a lot of the reason why it's not online, it's because the pay TV operator won't let it be. So there's this term, I don't know if it applies to other things, but it's the first time I heard it was when we were hunting out rights and, you know, getting ourselves going, is it's called warehousing. They warehouse the digital rights. Mm. So, you know, they're all sold and all these guys get it. And what they do with it is they just put the digital rights in the warehouse and don't use it for 3 years. They just lock it away. Mm. And so they buy it and don't use it. And so the reason why there's not more sport on the internet in New Zealand is typically that the rights holder isn't doing it. They've locked those rights away because they drives people to the pay TV platform.
Well, I guess if nothing else, what you're doing is going to, you know, surely stir some action around, you know, those situations where we've been forced to access sport content through one channel, and that's through the TV.
Yeah.
And without that digital access, this has surely got to sort of stir
those things
up. It's
going to make people think it's possible anyway. So
I think so. And I hope everyone rises to the challenge. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think it would be great to make... This is all about customer choice, ultimately, isn't it? No one has to buy the product. But if you buy the product, you should get it wherever you want it, when you want it. That's what the world is today. It's, you know, it's, you don't wait for stuff. You don't wait for stuff to be scheduled and tell, you know, and gatekept from you. And so I think this is what, you know, content through the internet enables, is you to watch it when you want it at a great price is the other thing as well. It's just cheaper.
So when you say cheaper, what's it going to cost for people to get online to watch
the
Premier League?
Well, so our standard season pass product, which is all 380 games live. All those games are available on site for 24 hours, so you can watch it within that 24-hour period. And then of those 380 games, 250 of those games go on demand for the week. That product is $149.90 for the season. That's 9 months, so that works out at about 40 cents a game. The premium product incorporates all the other Premier League produced programming that they do, and that stuff's fantastic. I mean, that is really mint stuff. It's two preview shows a week, it's four review shows after every match day. They do the full packaged review. That's all on there, and so for all that stuff, including all the games, that's $239.90. And then we have our basic sort of, if you just want to come in and check it out and see if you like it and not commit fully, we have a day pass running at $24.90. And what that day pass enables is full site access for 24 hours. Watch as much as you like.
And how's it selling for you?
It's selling amazing. It has been really great.
What's the ratio between that, you know, premier plan and your standard $150 one?
Well, what we're finding is I would say, like, it's around 2-1 to the basic, and then we're getting a lot of requests for upgrades. Is I think, but also as well, a really key point to know, the season hasn't even started. Mm. You know, we're a live streaming platform, so we haven't got much to show just yet because, you know, we haven't started yet. The season starts on Saturday. So, you know, I think when people see it and when they're really great, because it's about preview and review content and all that stuff, so the preview's going up in a day or two, you know, the preview to that first round of games. And then, but, you know, once the season kicks off, we are awash with content, man. There is just stuff coming down every day that's going on site. So we would expect a lot of people who have bought the basic, they will probably look to upgrade. We have an upgrade package available, which is fine. But really, the best deal, I mean, what I would advise consumers to do, exactly what I did, is I bought the platinum package because you're just done, you know. Done for the season.
Well, that's what you want, isn't it?
That's
you want
what
everyone
you want.
To buy the best.
You do. Yep.
Excellent. Oh, well, good luck with that.
Thank
and,
you.
Yeah, it is a pretty exciting time. We'll be following it closely.
I have
and,
no doubt.
certainly keep us in the loop.
We'll do.
What we'll try and do is put up on the NZ Tech Podcast site sort of some of our findings and recommendations. I've certainly had a few people getting in touch and, you know, saying, look, what do we do? How do we get this thing? What's the best way of getting it onto the TV? So it's nice to know there's certainly a few options coming together.
There is.
It'll probably vary from person to person in terms of what they've got. If they've got a reasonably capable laptop sitting around the house, That they can just plug in. That may be a good option, yep. But you know, other people are going to prefer to use an iPad, AirPlay, etc. To push it up to the TV.
Yeah. So, the other thing I would say is, you know, there's an 0800 number, PL Pass, and the other thing is pop into Noel Leemings. We've got an arrangement with Noel Leemings, and they're all fully briefed, and you know, if you go in there and say, look, here's my situation, here's what I've got, they'll put the rest of the pieces together for you.
Oh, that's kind of handy.
Yeah, it's great, you know, yeah. And they're everywhere, so, you know, they've been excellent.
And what would be a standard solution that they would put together? Is there a common one?
I think it
one?
Depends on what you've got, do you know what I mean? I think this is the thing, it's quite transitional for lots of people. I think the most common solution is one cable, a $15 cable, you know, to hook the computer system that you've got.
Up to your TV,
just like you would a DVD player. I mean, you don't expect a DVD player to work without a cord. And it's kind of the same. It's as simple as that, you know?
Yeah. And CB, what do you think about this from a bandwidth perspective in terms of the internet connections that most Kiwis have now? You know, we're talking for PremierLeaguePass.com, I think it's a 3 megabit connection as... you know, you need that about that much bandwidth to get you know, to get the best quality that yep. you're streaming for now.
Yeah, so obviously
many people that are going to have an issue with
anyone
that?
On the new UFB network's not going to have any problem at all.
Very true. Ultra fast broadband blows that out by about 30 times, right?
Yeah, exactly. And anyone on VDSL is also going to be fine, but there's only about 3,000 people in the country so far. So I think one of the things that's really would have made a difference in the last few years is the cabinetization that Chorus has done, and so average speeds have risen a lot. And you know, I think people will probably notice that, you know, YouTube and that kind of thing is buffering a lot less than it used to. And
yeah,
most providers have worked really hard in the last few years to actually make, you know, online video so that you don't have to sort of sit around and wait, because it really annoys people, and then they change providers.
Part of it is the caching picture as
well,
isn't
Tim's,
it?
Tim's using Akamai, which is a content distribution network and probably about the best. And so they've got servers all around the country, close to the core of an ISP. And so instead of having to go all the way overseas to get a video stream, it just comes out of a local server, and then, you know, a single stream comes down from overseas. So the technology's proven and should work really well. Yeah, so I don't see any problems with it. I think most people will be able to get a perfectly great experience.
Awesome.
Oh, good. That's certainly what I'm sure Tim was hoping to hear.
Yeah, man, that's great.
Yeah.
That really helps.
What about those on dial-up?
Dial-up, you're pretty much screwed.
Yeah, man, good night.
Why are you on dial-up unless you're in the middle of the country somewhere?
So I guess even a mobile connection would be, you know, these days, you know, 3G or 4G connection would be able to, you know, handle this with ease. The issue there being obviously our bandwidth caps on mobile, right? So, but even when we're just about to dive in, talk about the rural broadband initiative and ultra fast broadband. But even those on that rural broadband that's delivered over 3G, we're now starting to see caps. That would actually be able to
handle it.
Would be able to handle this without ridiculous expense.
Yeah, we saw this yesterday up at Samsung. They showed us on their 60. They showed Premier League Pass the test video that's on site there. They put that through a mobile phone, a Samsung phone, just the standard connection, and then through that phone, we use that phone as a modem and put it up onto the Samsung 65-inch new TV just through the browser, and it was fantastic. I mean, it just, you know, that was amazing for us to see. I've never seen, actually, I don't have access to a 65-inch television, so I've never seen the product that big before. And it was great, you know, it just worked. And, you know, you get to that point where you go, oh, it's just working, you know.
Is there the ability for customers to, I guess, do little back scrubs and do little pauses and replays?
Yeah, it's got all that. It's got that full feature. I mean, this is the thing. It's the tech is awesome. There's so much stuff that hasn't even been discussed or seen yet. So there's all that stuff. You can go forward, backwards. We have a team of people who watch every single game, and what they do is they clip the highlights in real time. Yep. So you get that little highlights bar, and you can just go down. So at the end of every game, for every match, there'll just be a collection of all that match's highlights you just click on. So you get all the goals, all the good tackles, all the red cards. It's all catalogued, and it's all there. You know, you have the ability to, you know, the great thing about this platform for something like the Premier League, where there's lots of games played concurrently, up to six at one time. You know, you can split your screen into four and have four games running on it at once, which matters in football, particularly come near the end of the season where everyone's results affects everyone else's. You know, plus as well, you've got all the games down below, so you can just flick channels. to bring two up at once, you know. It's the internet, you know what I mean?
It's pretty flexible, isn't it?
It's very flexible.
Yeah.
And we're taking full advantage of that to deliver what we think is a really great customer experience.
Now, looking ultra-fast broadband and the Rural Broadband Initiative, now we've got an announcement just in the last few days from Communications and Information Technology Minister Amy Adams out on her government letterhead, their report on their progress. They've rolled out fibre now past... what are they talking about? 129,000 end users in 28 towns, and they're 149,000 homes now having access to the rural broadband initiative. How do you think that's going, CB? I mean, what they're saying is, hey, when you say
the RBI has got 149,000, that's they're kind of on the footprint. That's not actual homes connected to the RBI.
Those are ones that are available, and yeah, I guess so, it comes down to people whether they choose to hook in. But I mean, this is a good thing that they're ahead of schedule.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's much better than being behind schedule, so they should have a pat on the back for that. I'm sort of in two minds as a technologist and also, you know, owner of an internet company, ISP. You know, I think, you know, great speeds are fantastic and they're going to be good for, you know, teleworking and all of the sort of things we haven't even thought of yet. But at the end of the day, although, you know, with UFB we've passed 130,000 homes.
And sorry, I've got that wrong. It's over 300,000. It was 129,000.
Oh, last quarter.
In the last quarter.
So 300,000 homes. We've got, I think, what, 3,000 or 4,000 connected. So it's not a lot anyway. It's sort of, you know, a percent. And from this perspective of an ISP, the process is still pretty difficult to get connected up to UFB. And that's not... You know, Chorus's fault or anything, but at the end of the day, you know, to hook up to something like VDSL, you ring up your service provider, 2 days later it's changed over from ADSL, you buy a new modem and it's done. You know, with UFB we've had, you know, scenarios with multi-dwelling units where people have been waiting 6 months and they ring us up all the time and then they get pissed off and then their driveway's got to be dug up and then all their neighbours have got to agree to get it in and all that kind of thing. So, you know, I'd kind of be in favour of kind of a hybrid solution where, you know, you sort of micro cabinetization, maybe you put something down to the end of a driveway, you get fibre as close to a dwelling as possible. But, you know, the rollout's proceeding and that's fine, it'll get there eventually. It's kind of frustrating from a service provider point of view in that, you know, there's not really any fibre or UFB services in, say, for example, the Auckland CBD. So, you know, when you get a customer who rings up in Katikati or something and says, oh, you know, can I connect to UFB? And then you check their address and say, yes, totally fine, we'll get it there in 2 days. And then you got a bunch of businesses screaming at you because they want better service in the CBD and they can't get it. It seems a little bit about face. But, you know, part of that is it's obviously harder to get into multi-level buildings and, you know, dig up busy roads and that kind of thing. But,
and that comes over time, yeah, doesn't it? I think, look, you know, looking at our premises here, there's a fair bit of fibre that actually runs into the premises, but, you know, it's a premium price to get that on at the moment.
Well, it's a totally different network, so, yeah, they're going to literally overbuild all of that. You know, the old HSNS dedicated fibre, you know, Telstra Clear fibre, the UFB network's completely different, so it'll just be overbuilt, so... You know, again...
there's a bit of work involved to do that, isn't there?
Well, there's a bit of work, but I mean, also, if there is fibre in buildings, it'd be nice to be able to just grab that and turn it into UFB, but that's not the way that it's going to work, so, you know.
Well, certainly looking forward to that getting out there further. Well, good to have some feedback on that. I mean, the RBI one is interesting, the Rural Broadband Initiative. And I've had a chance to, you know, to see that implemented in a number of situations. And it's definitely a good thing that we've got, we've got extra ways of, of connecting to rural premises. Still, the challenge there is, to some degree, the bandwidth caps and so on. But they're certainly a lot chunkier and better than it, even though, you know, often delivered over 3G and the future 4G connections, more reasonable sort of data caps. And
well, I think the RBI is super, devices, super important, so. Because I see that today Kazakhstan just banned New Zealand milk imports following on from Russia and China. So, farmers better get on to developing iPhone apps and things. They won't be making any money out of milk soon.
Yeah. Oh, well, I hope that's not the case. I think all
of New Zealand hopes that's not the case. But
I mean, great to have cheap milk here at home, but we need that export revenue, that's for sure.
I mean, I think what I'd say about that whole fibre initiative is that it's got to accelerate. You know, they've got to find a way to get people to adopt it quicker. Otherwise, what I see in this tech thing, and I don't see as much of it as others, but it moves pretty quick. And there's all sorts of interesting guys in this space, like, you know, those Huawei guys seem to be pretty aggressive with non-fiber-based product. And I think
fiber, because they're involved pretty much.
Well, that's
in
right.
Every
well, they
aspect.
Do build a lot of it, but they. You know, I could see, you know, if it takes sort of 7 or 8 years to start getting households, you know, a decent number of people connected to it, there could easily be something else that makes fiber a little, you know, there could easily be
one of the things that sort of confuses me, and I have raised it with the various suppliers that I just don't understand, is that essentially the, you know, the wholesalers, so there's Chorus, Enable, Ultrafast Fiber, and North Power, that are responsible for rolling out the network. They're sort of not allowed to be retailers. They're prohibited from being retailers. So they go and roll out the network. And then it's kind of up to consumers to figure out that the network's in their neighbourhood and then ring up someone like Voyager and request the service. And then we've got to figure out whether the service is in the neighbourhood, and then we've got to go and, you know, work out, okay, how do we actually, you know, is this customer on the footprint, and do a whole map, and then, you know, get the customer on board. And what I think should be happening is a central kind of organization where the actual installers, when they go into a neighborhood, they're permitted to actually go door to door and say, look, we're a neutral representative from, say, Chorus or Enable. We can't sell you the product, but by the way, you can get it. Would you like to sign up? Here's a pack with all of the service providers' offerings. You know, explain something going on, and then they'd get, you know, sort of 50% take up instead of this kind of, you know, 1% take up. So there's a huge amount of money being going into actually rolling the network out, and there's no money going into educating
people. Yeah, well, and that's just the final step.
It's actually outside your door. You just need to do this, and you can be on it. You know,
yeah, I mean, I have seen internet providers jump on board with that, and I remember when I got ultra fast broadband last year in Herne Bay, there was something left at the door by Orcon, and they did quite a good
look. Do you know how Orcon's doing that? It's so hard to get the information out that what Orcon's doing is they've actually got guys that jump in their cars in the morning and follow the Chorus vans around to see whether they're going to actually be installing, and then knock on the doors afterwards, because it's not easy. And
by anyone's standards, that's low rent.
Yeah, so, you know, it's actually quite a hard thing to do. It's not, you know, not particularly well organised. So, I've been trying to work out, you know, how to figure out how do we actually get a list of all of the addresses that, you know, we can talk to, and we're starting to get there, but it's, yeah, I think centralised coordination goes a long way. But
I think the whole picture will be easier, obviously, when it's all just there, and you can take it that, hey, if they're in Auckland, or they're in, you know, various areas that you know it's available.
I think
but
the other thing is,
it's going to take a little bit of time.
It is, but I tell you what, you start putting interesting bits of content on the internet and saying that's the way you're going to get it, and obviously that's the big driver, right?
Yeah, well, you're providing a public service. You know, this is the first scenario we've seen to break Sky's monopoly. So it's exciting stuff. Everyone should sign up, make you lots of money, so that Rupert Murdoch can make slightly less.
Well, that would be great.
You're less greedy, clearly, if you don't have a 65-inch TV.
Well, that's right.
If you had a 105-inch TV at home and stuff, yeah, I'd be worried. But
yeah, no, not yet. Give me some time, though.
Yeah, a couple more weeks yet. Let's see how people sign up. Hey, now, a few other interesting stories this week. Martin Jetpack have just finally got some sort of certification, I guess, for their they're not actually jet based, but they're rather large packs that can be worn by an individual to fly. And what they're saying is they have full certification from the New Zealand Civil Aviation Authority for manned flight, and they've made some pretty good progress in recent months in increasing the flight time of the aircraft. Now, these things look pretty crazy. Is this something either of you sort of be lining up to?
Yeah,
I'm
dead keen. I'm a little bit scared what happens when you suck up a bird or something in one of the engines, but I think it's
pretty
cool.
Well, you've got two. There's one on either side, so you'd just spiral out of control.
I don't know that it would fly very well on one engine, yeah, so...
I think it's awesome.
I'm definitely keen to give it a go, and if it's super fun, then I'll buy one for sure.
Good. Well, I'm looking forward to you buying one, CB, because I want to take one of these for a spin.
I've got a Tesla Roadster S on order and maybe a Martin.
Oh, have you? When's that going to be ready? Because I'm going to be in San Fran in a few weeks. And
2014, apparently.
Oh, that's far too long. All right, I'm going to have to get hold of Tesla and see if they can loan me one for the week that I'm... that I'm there. Do you know Elon Musk at all? Is he a good buddy?
No, he's not a good buddy. I have been in the same room as him before, but I haven't met the guy. But he seems pretty cool.
Well, talking of Elon Musk, who of course is famous not only for his Tesla electric
supercar.
Yeah, it's pretty good description. But also for SpaceX and shunting stuff up to the space shuttle and the like. He's been in the media today for this Hyperloop. Now, we were all looking at a bit of a video earlier on, and the Hyperloop is I guess a concept for delivering really, really high speed transport between at this stage between San Francisco and Los Angeles.
I think it's not just San Francisco and Los Angeles. It's
suitable city,
but the he was pretty coy on details originally and sort of said that he'd had this Hyperloop concept, which was a cross between the Concorde, a railgun, and an air hockey table. And the designs have been kind of put on the internet today. And so from what we can gather, instead of a typical bullet train like in Japan where you know the train has to kind of go against normal air pressure, it'd be sort of sealed in a tube, and maybe that you'd have two trains going in opposite directions that would then stop at the same time and start at the same time, and so the air would kind of swirl around like a couple of kids in a bathtub, as Tim said before. So effectively that lowers the effective air resistance and you can get close to the speed of sound. Elon's not going to build one but he wants everyone else to do it, so, but it's a good idea.
He's really clever, isn't he? Just come up with these ideas and let everyone else do all the work.
He's remembered as the saviour of the environment.
He's done pretty well with the things that he's working on so far, right? I mean, they're
proper.
He's not a failure.
He's got stuff to a space shuttle from Earth. That's good stuff.
Yeah, I think if you're competing with NASA and you've got a viable space program, you're obviously pretty clever guy.
I think it's a really good idea. I like it. I think because the thing I like about it is that $3 billion sounds like a lot of money, but what does the Waterview Tunnel cost? That's like that's a lot, isn't it? That's like $1 billion, isn't it?
$3 billion US isn't a huge amount of money.
Not really.
But if we pulled the money that we have in this room, I still don't think we quite have enough.
Not us. No.
But certainly the likes of Elon Musk would be in a position to handle it, right?
But what's that speed you showed before? 1,000?
1,200 kilometres an hour was the sort of speed that they're talking, that these little, tubes or I guess what would replace a train capsule, potentially could go at their peak, which
just,
is
just lower
pretty
than the
impressive.
Speed of sound. I think the speed of sound was a limitation because the sonic boom might blow the tunnels up or something like that. Who knows? But I think that
half an hour between Los Angeles and San Francisco. I've done that drive, and it's
9 hours,
not particularly exciting.
Hours.
Well, as Stevie said earlier, also it takes you more than half an hour just to get to the airport in LA.
So, what opportunity would that create? I mean, if let's say in that particular situation, or other parts of the world,
it gives you the ability to work in a completely different, different city. So you could, live in Paris and work in London, and if you're half an hour away from work, there's obviously, rent, and I was in San Francisco last month, and the rent is, astronomical because there's so many tech companies that are paying their people such good money that it's just going to push the rent up and up and up. It's almost as bad as Auckland.
Well,
you could have people living in LA and, having, their house in Malibu and things, then jumping on the Hyperloop and, popping up in San Fran to go to work at Google and then coming back home again. So.
And finally, you could move everyone to Ohio.
Yeah.
So, yeah, all sorts of possibilities there. I think this is going to be a fun one to watch, just to see how people respond and whether anyone takes this seriously at all. I know Elon Musk have been, you know, pretty critical of the so-called high-speed train plans that they were considering between San Francisco and Los Angeles, and they were basically saying they're at the lower end of the speed sort of spectrum for this sort of thing, and at the higher end sort of cost-wise. So I don't know whether this will be enough to sort of stir up a change there, but
well, I think the Auckland rail loop that Len Brown's proposing is going to be cost us $1.5 billion or something.
So that's
We should get him to double down, and then we can all commute to Hamilton.
Yeah.
Would you want to live in Hamilton?
Well, maybe people in Huntley might want to come here for work, or vice versa.
Because the Hamiltonians might not want to work in Auckland.
That's true. It could be a waste of money. Maybe we should give up on that idea.
No, it'd be a lot of fun, and I'm certainly interested to see what the response will be. But certainly Elon Musk should be jumping in there, boots and all.
I definitely think it should be experimented on and built in America and Europe as a trial, because you know, like you say, even in America, you know, there's been, you know, property prices going nuts. And if, as you say, Ohio, you know, if you could work in the middle of nowhere,
that's currently stupid, right?
Completely non-populated, you could have super cheap housing, you know, have a metropolitan, you know, centre that you can get to in half an hour, sort of expands.
In a country like Australia, you know, you just see one of that thing, and just all the populations around the outside, it just, you know, it just makes use of land.
All the snakes and
that's right,
crocodiles
death,
and
that just sits in the middle of Australia.
Not survivable.
All right, well, let's keep a watch. Now, other bits and pieces going on. The GCSB bill here in New Zealand, that's moving along in a direction that, CB, you're not too happy about. Tell us what's happening there. You're speaking at an event in these regards over the next few days.
Yeah, so I've been asked to speak on Monday the 19th at 7 p.m. at the Auckland Town Hall, which I'm definitely going to do. And Russell Norman, the leader of the Green Party, Winston Peters, Kim.com, and a few others, Dame Anne Salmond, the head of the Law Society, are all going to speak. So there's a broad section of New Zealanders that have a huge amount of concern about the GCSB bill. And essentially, John Key has sort of condescendingly told us that we don't have to worry and we should just all, you know, worry about fishing quotas and things instead, because we don't really understand what we're talking about. But
yeah, there was quite a hoopla about that particular statement on Twitter last night. I noticed, even though I wasn't watching the broadcast, that it was, you know, where that comment was made.
Yeah, the effect of the GCSB is going to turn the GCSB, which is currently a foreign spy agency, into a domestic spy agency, which is concerning enough. But I think that that combined with the current abuses of power and things that we have seen is very alarming. So, you know, we've seen American and foreign corporate interests effectively override public opinion. So you've got things like Sky City, you know, Warner Brothers, that kind of thing, commercial oiling and mining interests, decisions being made without really the public's kind of consent. And I, you know, the biggest irony, the, you know, I was kind of formerly a real John Key fan, and the thing that, you know, really sort of I guess did it for me was that I sort of thought, you know, there was the teapot tape scandal where, you know, John and you know, had a meeting, and there was 40 sort of reporters sitting around at a cafe documenting this conversation. And I sort of think essentially what happened is the Prime Minister's conversation was recorded inadvertently by a journalist. And I sort of think, well, if you're having a private conversation but there's 40 reporters around in a public forum in a public place, you should be more concerned about what you're actually saying. You should be more careful. But anyway, effectively, the government's department launched an investigation into the particular journalist. And even without John Key requesting it, the GCSB and the SIS were involved and pulled the journalist's tapes, conversations, messages and everything with his lawyer. So basically, because the Prime Minister got annoyed at a journalist, he, you know, the journalist's private client confidentially with his lawyer was breached. So that's, you know, a huge, I mean, it's very hypocritical, because, you know, on the one hand, you've got the Prime Minister in a public forum getting annoyed, hey, my privacy is being breached. And then on the other hand, he's going and, like, you know, breaching, in the worst case, you know, a journalist's kind of right. So when that's already happening pre-GSB, which is GCSB, which is going to allow effectively the government to snoop on all of our emails, all of that kind of thing, it's extremely worrying. And, you know, the thing that I sort of think is the internet's kind of an extension of our brain these days. So, you know, you Google something, you forget something. And, you know, when the Boston bombings happened, for example, I Googled, you know, pressure cooker bombs because I was like, well, how does that work? What happens? But I don't want to be, you know, kind of hauled in front of some Gestapo and said, you know, what were you doing here? So there has to be sort of an understanding that, you know, people think thoughts, but they're not necessarily going to act on. Or, you know, what's going to happen down the track if I search on heart disease and then, you know, 2 years later my insurance company, you know, says, oh, well, we're not going to insure you for that because, you know, 2 years ago you were Googling for this. So there has to be some line. And I think the real area of concern is that the bill is being pushed through hurriedly without any public forum, any public discussion. And the question has to be, why is that happening? You know, there should be at least a discussion about it. And
yeah,
that's
what's
the
rush?
Law Society is saying. So when the New Zealand Law Society says, hey, this is actually breaching the New Zealand Constitution, you've got to be quite concerned.
Yeah, I mean, it does seem there must be a huge pressure behind the scenes that we're not privy to on John Key to actually do this.
See, I wonder if it's like it's a big thing coming down from America or something saying, well, you guys do this.
I'm not sure whether you're aware, a lot of people have heard of like the Waihopai spy station. And effectively, the reason the Waihopai spy station is, you know, down in the South Island is because New Zealand's part of the Five Eyes spy network. So there's New Zealand, Australia, the UK, Canada and the US, and we all have this sort of agreement. And basically what we've done for years is we've spied on other people, other country citizens. So there's sort of an agreement that the US actually spies on New Zealand citizens, New Zealand spies on the US, Canada spies on Australia, and we all exchange information.
Lovely, isn't
and
it?
So
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so basically we do the US's spying because they're not, you know, allowed to spy on their own citizens. So we're already being spied on, but effectively this bill brings us in line with the changes to US law recently, which effectively legalizes, you know, spying. Yeah. But I mean, the US constitution is extremely under attack. They're one of the only countries that's hasn't ratified the Geneva Convention. There's a whole lot of things that are very concerning going on in the US, and I don't think we just want to get bullied into doing this just because
they say
we should be.
Yeah, and I think with some of the recent revelations certainly give us a lot more to be concerned about in terms of the way that the US has operated. I think in the past we've always seen the US as being, hey, this great big brother that helpful to New Zealand in lots of ways, and I'm sure, you know, the relationship still is in many ways, but that big brother is starting to take on some more sinister connotations.
In the last few years we've actually seen a massive reduction in the amount of privacy we have because we've get kind of freely given up our photos and what we're doing and all that sort of stuff to Facebook and Twitter. And so we've actually lost our innocence. We've lost our privacy. And so what we should be doing is we should be enacting laws that increase the level of privacy back to what they were, not strip them away completely.
Yeah, well, I mean, certainly the way that social media is sort of, become ingrained into society has, stripped down a lot of those things where we have had privacy and a gamification of sort of sharing your location on Foursquare or posting photos that have got GPS coordinates embedded in them, publicly on the internet for all to see. So at a moment in time, anyone anywhere can know where you are, who you're with, you know, et cetera, et cetera. There's got to be a downside of some of these things. And, you know, I think in most cases we're yet to see what those potential issues are, but in reality there must be some connotations.
This has sort of been pointed out on Twitter, but, you know, one of the phrases that the National Party's kind of used is, if you've got nothing to hide, you've got nothing to fear. So just let us enact the bill. But coincidentally, that phrase was used by Joseph Goebbels in sort of 1937 when the Nazi Party was going around doing things.
It's a terrible thing to say, do you know what I mean? Like, that's just tonally all wrong.
What, you're saying it's a terrible thing for me
to say?
No,
not
a terrible
thing
for them to say.
Yeah, for them, you're absolutely right.
If you've got nothing to hide, there's nothing wrong.
You can
understand the point, but the thing is it leads to unintended consequences. Like, for example, in France, 44% of Jews were exterminated, and in Holland it was 85%. And the reason that in Holland it was so much higher is that Holland had really good kind of records of who lived at what house and what their national identity was and all that kind of thing. And so the, you know, the concern is that not so much what's going on now, but, you know, what happens if we get a Robert Mugabe style takeover? Or
I was going to say, that's exactly right, because in many ways, you accept that, you know, if the law is handled really responsibly and it's used to, I mean, I don't know if there's terrorists in New Zealand, I mean, how would you know? And if that's a thing, you can say, well, I kind of get it, but it seems so open to someone just being a, you know, kind of misusing it and mismanaging it and abusing it.
Well, I think it's really hard to hold on to data once you've got it, as we're finding now, is that, you know, it is so easy for people to get at the data. So once it's collected, there's got to be that concern around.
That's right. Well, who else is going to get it?
I don't think that anyone has a problem with, you know, using sophisticated data mining, you know, methods to, you know, capture terrorists. None of us want terrorists. But the issue is that there doesn't seem to be a lot of oversight. And when you've got the Prime Minister taking personal vendettas against journalists going after them, then there's clearly, you know, there's no separation between
government. To abuse.
So we're going to get basically a dictator. You know, what's the difference? If John Key's the Prime Minister and he has the right to investigate any person and basically pull your phone records between you and your lawyer, well, you know,
we're already, also as well, you've got a whole department. Rabbit hole. You've got a whole department that's funded that needs to do something with this stuff. And we actually don't have a big terrorist problem in New Zealand. So, you know,
we certainly hope not.
Yet, you know, but it doesn't seem like we do, right? Because you're not really making a statement if you blow something up here, really, on a global scale. But so if they're not doing that, right, then what are they doing with it? They've got to be doing something.
Yeah. Well, I think, I mean, there probably is a genuine risk. I mean, we look at what happened at Bali a few years ago.
Yep.
There's no reason that sort of thing, you know, potentially couldn't happen
here. Well, in Indonesia, they're the world's most populous Muslim country. So there's... maybe chances there's less risk here. I mean, not saying that it's always Muslims.
Kiwis and Australians that were targeted in that case.
Sure, but we had a different you know, kind of belief system from the people that we were there. I think, you know, New Zealand's much more homogenous, but, you know, there's other issues like, you know, potential people being frustrated with poverty and that kind of thing. And we've obviously got, you know, children that we're not looking after and that kind of thing. So those are causes. But as far as terrorism goes, I don't think you've got, you know, huge clashes with ideologies of, you know, Western people having a good time partying on someone's country where they think, well, you shouldn't be in a bikini because that's against our, you know, religion. You know, rightly or wrongly, that's their, you know. Also, you know, to have that opinion.
Terrorist attacks, that they blow up bombs at a Boston marathon, that gets global headlines because then it's a big story. I mean, you do something in New Zealand, that's, you know, it's probably a news story for a day outside New Zealand.
I think we have a little bit more profile than that. But, you know, I think one of the other angles that to look at is that, you know, there's I read a report which says that, you know, essentially, if you think about it, all cloud services are in the US. You know, cloud services started with Gmail. They then went to Facebook and, you know, Flickr and, you know, YouTube and, you know, then you've got,
the rest,
you know, Hotmail, now Dropbox, you know, so all, you know, all of our files, all of our photos, all of our contact information, all of our emails, all in the US. And, you know, because of the revelations that basically the US is effectively intercepting every single email, every single photo. Oh, wow. You know, there was
No, we heard the stats out from the NSA. They said it's only 1.6% of content.
Well, that's actually not true, because I don't know whether you saw, but there was an interview with a guy from the CIA, and he was talking. He let slip, but it went all over the internet. And effectively, the guy from the CIA was saying, "Oh, the Boston bombings happened, and then after the Boston bombings, we pulled all of their, you know, recordings with all the people they talked to for like the last few years." So the NSA can pull all of your voice recordings, even if you're not a suspect and everything, after the fact.
Well, I think 1.6% is actually a pretty big number when you break it down, because you think of how much online is, you know, YouTube and Netflix and all these sorts of things. Then you've got encrypted content, which they can't, you know, at this stage probably do a whole lot with. 1.6% is a huge amount.
It's a lot of resource.
Basically, if the GCSB goes through, then, you know, we you know, risk living in a state where, you know, you get arrested for some minor crime or something, and the police then just decide to listen to all your phone calls. Now, another thing that's amazing that's come out only a week ago is that in America, the abuses of PRISM, which is the data gathering service, are already so rampant that effectively people are being picked up by police for minor drug, you know, non-violent drug offences, and also copyright infringement. So, you know, in the US they said, oh, well, you know, PRISM is there to prevent against terrorists. And what they've actually found is it's already been proven that what's happening is the You know, NSA is feeding information to local police and saying, well, you might want to be on the street corner and pick up this car at this particular time, and then, you know, some guy gets frisked down for, you know, some marijuana charge or whatever. And the data, then there's a whole process where that data's hidden, where it's come from, so that it's not found out that it's actually prison. So, I mean, do we want that here? I don't think we do.
Yeah, it sounds pretty scary. Well, the invite's out there. John Key, if you would like to come and join us. I'd certainly be interested in hearing the other side of this discussion, and I don't think it's been well put forward, which may just mean that there absolutely are no good responses to what CB's saying here.
I'm
but,
sure that John will be very keen to come on the tech podcast, because Campbell Live was not illustrious enough for him.
But certainly we'd be happy to have the government on and hear their views on the topic. Now, it seems we've sort of run out of time. We had a few other stories to talk about, some new gadgets and bits and pieces, but we're going to push those out to next week. So definitely catch us on the next NZ Tech podcast. We've got a whole lot of cool gadgets, apps, and bits and pieces that will be that I'm sure you will enjoy hearing about. But that's really us for this week. Now, guys, where do we track you down online? CB, you're on Twitter.
I'm on Twitter at CB, which is spelled SEEBY.
Excellent.
And just Google me. I'm pretty much the only one. So,
yeah. Yep, that's nice. And now, Tim, we found that you've just launched a Twitter handle.
That's right.
Today.
So Premier League Pass is we're up and going, and that's P-L-Pass.
Excellent. P underscore, isn't it?
With yeah, underscore, yeah.
Underscore L underscore pass.
That's right. So,
so people can track you down there.
That's
and,
it. We're up and going, and we're talking football and having a good time.
Excellent, excellent. And you can track me down on Twitter at Paul Spain. Techjungle.com is my Geek Zone blog. And, of course, for NZ Tech Podcast, we're at nztechpodcast.com. We're also there on facebook.com/nztechpodcast and on Twitter, NZ Tech Podcast too, so pretty easy to track down through those channels, Google Plus and the like. So do hit us up. We'd be really keen to hear your feedback on this this episode as well. If you've got any bits to fire back in terms of your agreement or disagreement on what's been discussed this week, and you can also email us feedback@nztechpodcast.com. So thanks everyone for listening in. Don't forget to look out for our two other podcasts, New Zealand Business Podcast that launched last week, sat right up the top of iTunes, I think place 2 or 3 or weeks. So thanks to everyone for downloading that, and our NZ Digital Podcast for those involved in the digital media and social media world. You'll probably enjoy that one too. All right, thanks for listening. See ya.